Blog Talk Radio.
I guess you're really up shit creek.
Ow!
Christ, Jake, take it easy, man.
That was...
Ow!
Jesus Christ! Ow!
Jesus
Christ!
Fucking Christ!
Ah, shit!
Ah, fuck you, man! Bitch, hey!
Jesus
Christ! Ow, you fat penguin!
I got a bad feeling about this.
Howdy, y'all. It's BD. I am attempting this while sick, and not only sick of at last night's game, but basically sick for the last week. So I am attempting to do a podcast tonight and kind of put to words what I've kind of gone into on Twitter, and might refresh and go over some of the stuff over the summer just so that we're all on the same page. And, you know, maybe we should kind of start at the beginning. And the beginning is when a team has certain commitments and certain points that it's supposed to be at, a certain juncture, it's supposed to change its priorities. It's supposed to have young kids start to push in to their new roles as, you know, the vets they can't afford to commit to. But maybe the players are near decline or, you know, at that age, like Kyle Bosso and Franz, where they have to make commitments in other places. And we saw that, as I forewarned last season, that they would not be able to sign them all. And in this case, they didn't sign any of them. And the change that would take place, and one of the items that I had harped on all summer, and I know that people didn't hear about it, but the Islanders were trying to make trades all summer long. If you followed along Twitter, I tried to keep that point on point. And if you've seen the rumors that have kind of shaken out since, that the Islanders are still attempting to make trades. This doesn't solve anything. I'm just kind of getting everybody to the same page. The Islanders have recognized that they need to fulfill roles, and they're not necessarily happening internally at the same speed that they need to. And free agency was the backup plan. And as I had warned all summer, that was not the best backup plan. One is it hasn't historically been good for the Islanders in terms of even getting what they desire. In this case, when they were forced to go to free agency instead of any trades, you know, they thought they had somebody in Andrew Ladd, which, you know, I know that people are calling him a free agent bust. This is a guy that's not that old. So whatever his issue and adjustment that's going on is, you know, ongoing. You know, we are a month in. So I don't think that that's written on the wall of a free agent bust. They definitely paid a very heavy price. And as I've explained, that's a future buyout. That was the price to get that player when they weren't able to get any kind of trade going. So there's a bunch of different things in play. And one of it is in kind of harping in some of the coaching items. These are integral flaws to where the kids are not moving and developing in the same rate that they need to. And some of that is obviously from a little bit of the veteran stubbornness that Capuano had last season. How much more games would Pulock have had under his belt? I know he's got injury now, but, you know, and been able to develop and have a shot within the top four this season had he had more time and not always been sat last season with his love, you know, Capuano's love affair with Brian Strait. You know, they improved, at least in Sandenberg, at least in the quality. He's actually, defensively, the Islanders have not been that bad. The only defensively weakness that I see is that Hamonic is really out of his element in the first pairing. That seems to he's being relied on. He's chewing lots of minutes, playing okay time to time, but overall, anytime that he's kind of been paired with Letty has been a struggle. Everyone else has actually been better this season. Offensively, it's another story. And, you know, offensively, the game that we all watched last night was one of the, you know, crappier games that I think a lot of people have seen in a while. And last season, John and I had brought this up. I brought it up a couple times, that those were my notes of concern. When the Islanders got blown out, those seemed to be these regression points last season. There was a couple in the beginning of the season, and then they got it kind of ironed, squared away. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you, a year ago, we were a little concerned in the first 10. I hate to remind everybody. There were some losses in the first week. They looked pretty bad versus Chicago right off the bat. So, you know, I know that, you know, look, it's a 4-6 record. You know, they're two games away from 500. But it is those flaws and those issues that are causing the concern. And they're right to be concerned, and they need to be handled in some way. And I don't know if they're going to be able to handle it with the current coaching staff, but we'll try to go about it and think it out. So, but one of the things that, you know, offensively was not the issue last night, to just kind of repeat. It was a complete unraveling last night that happened throughout the whole game. And it was something that I was already annoyed when you look at the Penguins game two games before. The Islanders come out in that second period, and they take over that second period. And then in the third period, they get walked all over by the Penguins, which harkens to so many third periods under Capuano's watch. The other thing is, and Capuano said it after the game and also said it to some others after over the weekend, was that he was citing that the goaltending wasn't up to snuff. And it, really, through the first 6 to 7 games, he's right. The goaltending, whether you're a Greiss fan or a Halak fan, the key high-danger shots was way low for both players. And goaltending was not the issue necessarily last night. But the goaltending was off. But if you know your goaltending isn't that good, doesn't that give you impetus to make sure that your team is out pushing in the offensive zone instead of back on their heels in that third period versus the Penguins? And that's my issue, because you can cite the goaltender, but if you know that's a definitive weakness, then you need to offset it. And Capuano is never, ever proactive. It is always reactive or after the fact. And that is a definitive flaw of his tenure. And if you add in the lack of development at the key junctures, and you add their struggle in the last two seasons in possession. Their possession game is garbage this season. It wasn't very good last season. Two seasons ago, in the very beginning, it was insanely good because of Letty and Boychuk, who were paired together, having fabulous, almost all-star level seasons for most of the season, and were able to really kind of push that possession play. So we haven't seen that in a long time. Now, obviously, Boychuk didn't exactly have a good year last year. He's definitely shown a little bit better this year. So it makes me feel like I would like to see Boychuk and Letty back together this season. I don't think that the Letty-Hamonic combo just doesn't work. And basically, if we go back to you know, even the issues of last season during the playoffs, of issues with Capuano, especially during the series with Tampa, where, you know, Capuano just basically unraveled. And, you know, we saw that there was, you know, lack of growth, mistakes, not moving up to the next level. And I think that is taken on in the team as well. And, you know, we're in a, you know, it was a summer of adjustment and a summer of change. And the team goes into the preseason and walks out of the preseason just as confused as they were in the preseason. We have, you know, they're still testing out forwards on the top line. So this team seems to be perpetually unprepared for the season, waiting for some sort of trade to happen, which, as we know, if following me with the summer, there was really no trade market. Only two forwards of any import, you know, were dealt. You know, Rangers got a center from Calgary. And and of course Taylor Hall goes to New Jersey, which of course has Islander fans smacking their heads. But I've kind of explained it on Twitter. They seemed very, very much on Larson. So you know, I know that, you know, there's always that complaint of why, you know, you have to make the offer and make it happen and all this other stuff, but. You know, there's 28 other teams that didn't get him either. So there wasn't that much of a trade market. So the Islanders seem very woefully unprepared for this season. And the coaching is certainly not surmounting this. You know, they made a decision on P.A. Parenteau, who I don't think was that great to begin with. You know, the thing about, you look at PA's numbers on New Jersey, also look at how many goals that he leads to on that same line. That's the thing that keeps on kind of getting ignored. And that's always been PA's issue, is that, you know, the deficiencies also that comes along to it. You know, you can score a couple, but if you're there and one of the reasons that you're being scored on as well, you're not that much of a boon as you think you are. And I think that, you know, whatever reason that the Islanders, you know, the Islanders don't do that very often. In fact, they usually do the opposite. We have the whole situation a couple of years ago with Corey Conacher being, you know, pushed and pushed and pushed, trying to try him out and everything else and just doing crap on JT's line and then finally waived. You know, that took a while. And here you have the opposite. So you know, it's not like the Islanders really do that to a lot of players. So they clearly saw something that they didn't like, that didn't work for them. Problem is they didn't have another answer. The reluctance to use kids is baffling to me, because right now kids are about the only goddamn fucking reason that they might get anywhere this season. If, you know, that's the one shining point is, you know, one rookie And then you have Barzal just sitting, trying to gain time, and a complete and utter reluctance by the coaching to get him in. As if having two rookies is somehow going to blow it up. And that, and it's like, I don't know, rearranging the deck chairs to the Titanic. How much are you going to be concerned about the deck chairs when things are not working right? Don't quite understand the stubborn reluctance. You know, last season, there seemed to be, as I coined, capolinics, where analytics was not equating to what Capuano was doing. I think his relationship with Ryan Strome isn't particularly good. And I think, and I've talked about this before, I don't think his relationship last season with all his players were as hunky-dory as in previous years. They really did not like when Capuano would call them out publicly or in a press conference, but never approach or talk to them in the locker room. That was a big gripe, and I do believe that that got dealt with at the end of the season and the end of the season meetings, but it was definitely something that, you know, was complained about. You know, no coach is perfect, and certainly not this one, but, you know, there'll always be some griping back and forth. In subsequent years, players were very pro Capuano. Last year was the first time I had heard, you know, some churn, some mixed feelings over that. And also, you know, changes in how he went about things, and it just didn't sit well throughout. And here we are, you know, this season. And of course, there, you know, in the Tampa game is a complete and utter regression. It's here is your regression game, the one that we haven't seen in a long time, but it's a really bad one. Everything has fallen apart. It's embarrassing. And fans are rightfully already pissed off because, look, we've had a summer of change. We see players doing well in other situations, and the Islanders didn't solve theirs. That is on the GM. You know, whatever they're waiting for, it better happen soon, because, you know, if you're not changing the personnel and you're not changing your coaching staff, what's going to change? So, you know, who's going to carry that load? You know, it doesn't seem to be, you know, those young players, you know, Strome's not actually having a very a bad season at all. He's actually doing fine. Lee is not. And Lee is having some trouble. And obviously we've talked about Andrew Ladd as a free agent. Chimera is being used on the third line. So 3 assists is not a big deal. You know, my thought and my concern here is that I know that he was originally brought in to be on the fourth line. So whether he's on the third or fourth, you know, the third line needs to score and he needs to tally more. But I don't think that is so much an issue as opposed to a creation of the flux that's going on. So you have all that. And we don't have the type of leadership from the coaching to change things with confidence. And, you know, and of course there's the drama over the 3-goalie system, which shows the Islanders do not trust that Halak will stay healthy. I mean, that's the bottom line here. They do not believe Halak will stay healthy. And I think that last season, Arthur Staple had gone on Twitter and kind of given his take on thinking that Halak would be moved, which he would not be, but that's neither here nor there. It wasn't that he was necessarily wrong. He was being given information from sourcing that kind of felt that that would be the case. It's just the market was not going to work that way. And I think that really stems from perhaps a coaching staff or somebody feeling that Halak didn't do the type of work that Grice was doing to always further himself, that Halak has some habits and isn't, you know, look, Halak has gone from several teams already. And, you know, he is a little bit of a journeyman. So he can definitely show and do it for a little bit. But I think in the last season, we're seeing a little bit of complacency. And I think that that was coming through last season. And here, you know, he does the World Cup and looks good, and then comes to the Islanders and doesn't look so good. He hasn't had a very good season so far. Once again, Grice too. Basically, the most important shots they need to, the type of saves they need to make are called high danger shot saves. And that percentage is lower. And those are those key saves that really, you know, win or lose the game. And they've been losing the game. They haven't been getting into the overtimes. They haven't, you know, that's the difference this season. And then we have, of course, the blowout last night. And we're all sitting here with these multiple issues. And that's the key. There are multiple issues here, all coming to bear in certain ways. So how does the team get through that? Because it's not one thing. You know, everybody, and that's what kind of annoys me, is that everybody's like, if JT only had that key winger, like that would have made the difference last night? No, that wasn't the issue last night. That's an issue about getting to the next level. You know, this should is the key word here. This should be a 100-point team, whether JT has the key winger or not. And that is my problem. So, you know, that's the issue, that the youth are not getting into the key junctures. Lee is not getting to the next level, and which drives me nuts, because towards the end of last season, before he got hurt, he was starting to play his type of game. And here he is not. And it's so disjointed and it's so discombobulated that the only answer that I can come up with is you need a change. And that change has to be in the coaching culture and, you know, to solve it. And, you know, there is a very limited list of there's not this world beater coach that's out there that's going to suddenly fix everything. You know, maybe somebody like Bob Hartley, that's a friend of Garth Snow's, that is analytics friendly and has experience in being in different players. So he has some winning seasons and he has some losing seasons. Maybe that would be the type of person who could recognize the situation and perhaps work with it. All these coaches have had failures too. There's no surefire answer. And I think that's the problem, that everybody wants the magic pill. And right now there's no magic pill. I don't see how anything is necessarily going to change. All we're going to see is that some sort of struggle is going to take place. And the question is, you know, how long is that struggle going to take place until something breaks, something changes, whether, you know, Lee and Ladd get their shit together, whether the goalies, you know, the Islanders are able to make a move. Once again, you know, in this cap era and the way that the teams are against the cap, when Halak is on the books next season, you know, for an average of $4.5 million against the cap, teams don't want to take his contract without pushing somebody back with money. And that's what makes that kind of trade difficult. I do think that the Islanders need I think that Halak has been available all summer. This is why I poo-pooed it when Staple had made his point on Twitter, because the market doesn't bear it. That at the time, there were other goalies that were, more desired. And that's, that's the bottom line, and that's what we saw. And now the Islanders clearly don't have a lot of faith in, because they're holding on to Berube at all costs. So, something has to happen there. So I would say that, if the Islanders feel that Halak is not the answer, and Greiss is, even though he's not anywhere near how he played last season, has played a little bit better than Halak this season, then the hell with it. Deal Halak. Let's go with Greiss and Berube. I don't see a problem with that. The team is behind it. The organization seems behind it. So, whatever it takes to do that, I think will be key now. I think that's step one. Step two is, unfortunately, the coaching change is not going to happen yet. That's going to be some sort of process. Does it happen in the next 10, 20 games? It really depends on how this team collects itself. How does it sort itself out? As a fan and as I've watched the team as you have, there's not a lot of faith there. Look, last season they've had some 10 game junctures that they didn't look particularly good, including a couple losing ones. But this is, more than that, because they've gone through so much change over the summer, losing some chemistry, losing, key players. And I think that added on is a tough thing to surmount. And right now the team is clearly struggling. Possible that they go 6-4 the next 10 games? Yeah, it's very possible. It doesn't mean they've solved their issues though. And that's the bigger picture. Now, look, we look at 10 game junctures as I've done the last season and why I'm doing this show tonight. But, there is cause for alarm because the team is out of sorts and it's obvious. And it must find, you can't just rely on JT. You can't just rely on those things because there are still the flaws and gaps coming to bear. And even if a couple of things fix themselves, there are multiple items here. It's not just one or two things. And that's what concerns me. And that's what, really kind of sets the table this season on how that, not everything's going to sort out right away, but the bigger question is how on the course of the season will these things be fixed? We all want immediate things, immediately coaching change, immediately GM change. Maybe you want that forward for JT. You may immediately want Halak or Greiss traded, whatever it is. Those things don't happen immediately. And the question is, how many of those things will sort itself out as the season goes on and how the team is able to get through it? That's what's going to really, do it. The 4-6 record is not the end of the world, but it is a ring of a gong, especially with the Tampa game, of a real clear issue. Of, that things are not well. So it's going to be a little bit, I think, of a work in progress. That's, my prediction. Whether they can fix, immediately, no matter what they do with the goalies, whoever is in goal must make better high danger saves. the Islanders have not been helped by their goalies. True of the first 7 games. Fact. So that has to get better. If that gets better, you could have 500 team. Doesn't fix everything, but it certainly stops a little bit of the bleeding. At the same time, you also need to sort out Andrew Ladd as a third liner, at which I called him last year because of his play in Chicago, is haunting me because that's what he's really become right now for the Islanders. And that is severely concerning. But this is also a guy who scores 20 to 25 goals per year and right now hasn't scored anything. So something has to gel on those lines. Now, I don't exactly have a lot of confidence when you've seen, Shane Prince on the top line. I don't think he's a bad player. I also think that his start of the season was very awkward because he was injured in the preseason. But he is a guy with upside and is expected to be somebody who could really work out in the top 6. So I don't mind that. I think they're kind of pulling at strings here. And they don't seem to have any answer. It's just like, like I joked on Twitter that some Long Island Peewee team is going to be trying out with JT next. So it doesn't exactly, exude a lot of confidence in how the Islanders are going about their lines. But what also drives me nuts is, the lack of use of kids with upside. Now, I know that everybody looks at Josh Hosang and a little less Dahl Cole, who I think is more of a more likely to be traded, in my opinion. Josh Hosang, the reason he's in Bridgeport is to develop properly, that they don't think he's there yet, that his play without the puck is what is concerning, that, yeah, he might score 4 goals, but if the team is scoring 5 goals on that line because of weak spots without the puck, that he's not the boon necessarily that you thought he was. That's why these players need to fill out and fully develop physically and mentally. And I was told that, physically he hadn't fully developed yet last season and over the summer. And that's why I said that he would be at Bridgeport. And there he is at Bridgeport. He's exactly where he's supposed to be. Now, is he a potential call-up? Absolutely. And it will be great if he's able to. But, it was just a year ago this kid overslept and screwed up his camp. This is not somebody that, this is somebody who's learning and developing. And we should remember the rushing players like we did with Josh Bailey and like the Islanders did with Nino Niederreiter also has effect. And that's why I don't mind him not being up. And, if he's in Bridgeport, then that's where he belongs. So I don't think that, everybody should look for that as the simple answer. If a player goes down and there's an opportunity with him or somebody else coming up, great. But, somehow the Islanders have to sort this out. And, once again, there's not many players being traded right now. The time that players will be traded is at this trade deadline. So I don't see how this, the bigger issue of a wing for JT might not happen until, the team hopefully is somehow in the playoff hunt by that time. One hopes if they're able to get it together. Because I do think this is going to be a very, very active trade deadline because of, some teams know that they're not going to make the playoffs. Some teams know. And there's an expansion draft next summer. And that's a big deal. And that's going to make a lot of teams start planning for that, to make those moves, not be caught, at the last minute and at a disadvantage. So I do think it's going to be an active trade deadline. But, that's not going to move now in November. Maybe starting at Christmas onward, could the talks really become heavy And, you know, it's at the trade deadline. It's usually, you know, that hard stop that finally things happen, especially when it involves money. The Islanders are, you know, very close to the cap. Whatever deal or whatever they've been trying to work on has been, you know, has a lot of moving parts because of the financial part. So, you know, those things usually take a lot of the season to happen. So, you know, I don't think that a trade is going to happen right away. So this really leaves us with what we have. And that's going to be difficult for a lot of fans, unfortunately. You know, the team is not, you know, until they, you know, fire the coach, which I don't think is going to happen necessarily anytime soon. You know, then, you know, you got to hope for what I feel is incremental changes. And those incremental things could add up. It is in the, you know, the little things of the goalies getting a little bit better. Some of the forwards starting to gel. Just that and a 6-4 record could really offset what has been a really kind of a horrendous and unsettled start. But I think from my point of view, I think that those answers are going to have to be incremental. And that's going to be difficult for a lot of fans that want immediate dividends, immediate change. And I get it, you know, it's frustrating. This is a team that should have, you know, when we drafted Ryan Strom and other young kids, they should be making a difference and being up to the next level. And Anders Lee and all these other guys, if you're willing to say goodbye to Kalaposo and Franz Nielsen, then you really want those kids to be at the next level. And it's very frustrating that they're, you know, are in flux. You know, from what were pretty good, solid seasons 2 years ago. So, you know, there's a lot of things here. And I unfortunately, this is really no easy answer. I don't know if this is just going to be like the worst podcast ever, that it's just BD being a downer. But, you know, that's how I see it, that it's going to have to be incremental, that they need to shore up each and everything as best they can and hope that that effort is going to start to lift them out. And that is not going to solve the people that want, you know, the pitchforks and Capano's head on on a stick and all that other stuff. But, you know, I can't, you know, this it's, you know, what fans want and reality and what the team does. So, you know, if the team is not going to blink and change the coaching staff just yet, then this next 10 are going to be really key to start to shore up the pain. And that means they really must get back to a 6-4 record in the next 10 and being at 500 in the next 10 is not exactly in the greatest of situations, but that's what it is. But if it's not, and they're at a losing mark in 10 games, then the coach has to change. You know, I don't want to do a podcast in 10 games where we're at the same exact point where we were now. It would be, I don't even want to have to read Isle's Twitter at that point. So, but you know, I do get the frustration. I do feel the unsettlement. I do feel that the Islanders missed on the things that they wanted to do, and it's showing. It's showing terribly right now. And how do you make that happen? Do you overpay? Do you know, it takes two teams to tango. So how do you make, you know, if the Islanders have been in flux, to make some sort of trade or something to happen? And I'm still convinced that it has to do with, you know, somebody like Travis Hamonic, who is still, you know, the you know, one of the players that, you know, the Islanders need to decide where they're going to make commitments to for the next summer's expansion draft. Are they going to not protect Brock Nelson or Anders Lee? Are they not going to protect or Ryan Strome? Are they not going to protect DeHaan or Pulock? You know, and something like that. They have some big decisions to make, and that's why I feel that any kind of trade that they're trying to work on is actually substantial. And, you know, it's why I feel that somebody like Hamonic could still be in play, because look at the Islanders. You know, they're using Hamonic in your top pair when he's not a top pairing guy. He's a number three or a number four. He's the second pairing unit, and a very solid one at that, with a wonderful contract. But, you know, it still bothers me that, you know, they're using him in this kind of awkward way, and it's still not quite working. He's chewing up the minutes, and he's doing what he needs to do, but I don't think the team is working optimally. So, you know, I really wonder what kind of trade or, you know, or what they're trying to do, that things are left in flux. And, you know, I really wish I could come up with some sort of answer, because, you know, the team just seems to be in flux until that happens, or at least unable to get to the next level. You know, they have some good pieces and kids that need to develop along. You know, you have Pulock, you have Pelech, you have Hosang, you have some kids in the system. You have a great goaltender possibly coming in a year or two with Sorokin over in the KHL, who has better numbers than any of the NHL Russian players that have been in the KHL at his age. You know, but unfortunately, that's like, you know, talking about 2 years, 2 years away, unless he buys himself out next year. All these things are not the answer now, because as we know with Strome and other players, kids need to develop. That even when they are called up, they're not miracles. You know, it's great to see, you know, some of the kids make a difference. But, you know, it is frustrating to see Barzal with his playmaking skill just not used. That frustrates me, too. I would like to see both of them in the game or back and forth. I don't. You know, it's almost, I want to scream shit or get off the pot. It's like, if he's up here, then he should be used. And there's just been this reluctance to be used. You know what my biggest issue with Capuano is? I feel like that reluctance is because he wants to just hold on, rather and failing to recognize that it's the reluctance that is holding them back. It is the reluctance and stubbornness and fear to lose that's holding them back. Because if you know your team is giving reports and following analytics, and you have young kids with skill sets that fall into that, and you don't use them, baffles me a little bit, because it's like fearing the future. And I think that's probably my biggest issue with Capuano, who used to be a little bit more development friendly, but the more he's held on and been at the long, and probably far too long, is all about holding on instead. And I think that is probably his biggest weakness right now. Because why not just, you know, go forward, try new things? It's not, you know, when, and I explained this on Twitter, and it's important. one of the best times to be in the press box as a writer, to me, is when the Islanders get their ass kicked. Let me explain. You know, because you don't get the canned answers. You don't get the cliches. You get the frustration and the emotion. I would almost skip to go back to that locker room. It was, you know, that is when you can get a measure of the players and the coaching. It was then that I knew that Scott Gordon wasn't the guy. When I was back in the very beginning, you know, when I was always back there for Scott Gordon, it was at the Carolina game or some other game, and the Islanders just got destroyed. And I would go back there, and he would just get more and more closed down and much more, you know, he used to get a pissed off from some questions. And you could just tell that he wasn't the guy. And you could tell from that, and that to me is where the drama is. And that's where, how does the team come back together from that? And where you don't get the canned response, you don't get the cliche. That's what drives me nuts about going, you know, when things are going well or even just a normal game, you go back there, you will never get that good of an answer unless things have unraveled. And, you know, it's too bad because I would have liked, but, you know, to see Capuano live. But even in his responses to in the recordings, you know, he got defensive on, you know, he knew about, you know, what they've tried to achieve in the last 3 years. The last 3 years have been a little bit of a struggle of getting to the next level. And when you're defensive over those 3 years, you're thinking about yourself and not necessarily where the team is going. And I think that it does show a little bit of, clearly he's been there too long. He's been there too long, and it's about holding on. And that doesn't drive the team forward. And that is probably the crux of my issue of him and the coaching staff. You know, I am not necessarily a Doug Weight fan, mainly because Doug Weight has run the power play, and I have yet to see the power play do a goddamn thing. The only coach that I feel has achieved anything for this team is Cronin, who came in. The PK was terrible. And then last year it was, you know, one of the tops in the league. And yes, this year, the penalty kill has not been particularly good. It was in the very first couple games. I do believe that has to do with the personnel change and because of the flux of the lines and not kind of getting a feel of how that's going to work itself out. You know, they've gone through some big changes to it. But I feel that Cronin is probably the only coach on that team that I've seen improvement with. In terms of other coaches, you know, everything else is going to be another crapshoot. You know, people were talking about Travis Green. There's coach like Dallas Aikens. There are AHL coaches that you don't know what they're going to do in the NHL. These are not necessarily, you know, magic pills of any sort. And what are they going to bring in is a big question mark. And I can see the reluctance of the Islanders to make that kind of change. The only, you know, real veterans that are still kind of floating around are, you know, nobody's really a world beater, but, you know, you can go and look at, you know, Mark Crawford. I think he's an assistant. He says he's analytically savvy, but let's be honest, he hasn't been an NHL coach during these advent of analytics these days. Bob Hartley is, as I mentioned before, is probably about the only one that I might have a little bit of faith in possibly being able to do anything. But you know, it's just a thing. There's just really no simple answer to it, and that makes it so difficult. You know, if we look at other coaches, you know, you have I said Dallas Aikens. He's head coach of the AHL San Diego Gulls. He's the former Marlies coach. Used to be the Leafs assistant coach. You have Sheldon Keefe, also a Marlies coach in the AHL. You have Travis Green. He was linked to the Ducks vacancy, but he's still an AHL coach. You have Dave Cameron, assistant coach of the NHL Flames and the Senators coach back from 2014 to 16. You have Mark Crawford, who's an assistant coach of the Senators. You have Bob Hartley, former coach of the Flames. Mike Yao, who's associate coach for the St. Louis Blues and is former coach of the Wild. And you have Ron Wilson, former of the Ducks, Capitals, Sharks, and the Maple Leafs, which is basically a coach washout. Kind of seems a little bit of the old guard. And then you have Cronin, who's probably the only one that I would probably put the interim tag to. And only because, you know, people have mentioned Brett Thompson. I just don't think he's the guy. That's just my personal opinion. I could be wrong. But, you know, there are no, you know, world beaters out there that's going to suddenly take the team and give it the answer that we're all looking for. So brings me back to hoping for the incremental change. And it has to happen right away. The goalies need to be better. You can't see that kind of regression game again. I really watch for that. You know, we can say, you know, a 4-6 record, 9 of those games were at least games that they were in it to the very end. The 10th was just a nightmare. It's really key that regression game be rare, like it was. We saw it in the beginning of the last season too, and then it disappeared. It's really key that regression game does not happen again. It is, that is where my concern is. That's where the abyss is, because that reminds me of when the team used to go into, you know, 5-10 game, you know, spin outs. Those were the type of areas. That's what the Tampa game really harkened back to. And that's why I think, you know, that has to be eradicated right away. The rest is just incremental. And I think that is not the answer that people want. I don't think it's going to satisfy a whole lot of people. And we just got to hope for the best. And, you know, I can call for a coach change. I can call for that the Islanders need to make a key trade and move out some of that defense and figure it out. But is it going to be done? No. So you have to go for the incremental change in the meantime. So, but like I said, look, there's a bunch of things coming to bear. And it has made it very difficult. As a fan that's seen 2 playoff seasons, and even when we have that, it was still a season of struggle last year, only carried by goalie depth and during the playoffs, Grice and basically JT. Can the Islanders get back to that? They can, but it's going to have to really shore up. But if they want to get anything past that, it needs to be a key trade. It needs to, Strom or someone needs to blow up. You know, it really needs to have a bunch of things come into play. So, you know, once again, as I backtrack, this is why I say, you know, it's going to have to be a question of incremental changes. And that's not the sexy thing to say. It's not the sexy thing to want. It's not the thing that everybody wants to see, that we're going to have to kind of, hold on to the table or TV or whatever we're holding on to with white knuckles and hope that they pull out a couple games and put together some sort of winning record in the next 10 to 20 games. That's not an easy solution. And it certainly doesn't help. But unfortunately, I think that's where we are at. And, you know, you got to hope that these things kind of sort out. You got to hope that Andrew Ladd is going to get through this, because he's not somebody people are acting like he's 36 or 38 30-year-old guy who's had, you know, slow starts before. So you would think that he should be able to turn it around and get back to the 2025 goals that he's really there for. I don't care where he does it. You know, yes, it sucks if he's on the third line doing that, but you know, he needs to be back in the top six. And you know, that's the kind of incremental change that you could possibly expect. But the rest of it has to come from kids and you know, people stepping up, you know, and people kind of filling in the gaps. And that's not what's happening. The only time I've seen that happening right now is defensively until the Tampa game. But, you know, before that, the defense has actually been probably the strongest thing. You know, people call it the eye test because they see mistakes, not realizing that mistakes happen all along the game. It is how the team kind of responds to the mistakes and how it kind of bears out. The defense has actually been pretty strong this season. It's the goaltending that has not been, and then obviously the offense has not been. So it needs to get back to that defensively, and the goaltenders need to play better. If those two points of strength and depth, no matter what Alan Walsh thinks, it's still a place of depth. If that shores up, that does help until the Islanders offensively figure it out. But once again, they better figure it out in the next 10 games because it's, you know, the season's going to just fly on by. And, you know, the last thing we want is a long season where every 10 games we're having a depressive bitch session. So, but anyway, I think I've gone on enough. Hopefully this has made some sort of sense. Like I said, I'm kind of doing this while I'm sick. So if this wasn't the most cohesive BD Isles Beat podcast, I apologize. I just felt like it was necessary for everybody, including myself. You know, that Tampa game, I was just as irate and annoyed and had to go to comedy on Twitter because at the point of frustration, I don't know what else to do. That's what I do. You know, I don't watch the games with dispassion, and you know, it just happens to go in other ways. I try to look for how they can kind of sort it out. It's a little bit frustrating here to not really have an answer because there is none. That's why it's just about incrementals. And it's kind of a frustrating thing to say out loud and say, this is what we got to hope for. But that's where, you know, that's the only thing I can think of. You know, Jeff Capellini had a very good piece today on the Garth trying to repair mistakes. I thought that was a very good piece. I think that remains to be seen. But I still think that the only time that a wing, they're going to have to figure it out before that, because I don't think one GM can shake another GM to making a deal. So that's the great difficulty of it. And I think that, you know, there are others saying that, you know, changing the coach wouldn't really repair the issues. Actually, it might. But you have to be willing to change the culture. And the reason is if there is something not happening with developing of players or working the right lines or working with the best practices of analytics and all those things in conjunction, then you get a staff in there that can. And that can, you know, yes, there's not an immediate answer from that as well. But at least that eradicates one problem and, you know, has an opportunity to reset, be repaired. And, you know, it doesn't necessarily get better right away, but at least it kind of vacuums out a problem within the system. Like I said, I feel like the coach is too focused on hanging on and what he has than kind of, moving forward to the kind of, I don't think that Capuano and Garth Snow are in working in conjunction. I feel that that there is a there's a discombobulation. They're not in sync, and I think that that showed last season a lot by them using straight, and especially when it drove me nuts when they were using Bernier, you know, not the most skilled veteran in place of skill. You know, it just doesn't work. And it's not putting the team forward. It's not moving the future. And it's not developing. And if you're afraid for your position, then, you know, then you're affecting the team. So that's really, you know, probably my verbalized sense of things. And hopefully it made some sense tonight. And if not, well, we'll do it again next week or the week after, and hopefully things will change. So on that, I hope that this podcast helped. And if not, well, hell, what could I do? So anyway, till next time, folks, I think it's time to bid adieu. And I'm looking for some sort of soundbite. That wasn't it. All right. We'll end on this.
Yes, what is it?
I need to go poopies.
And on that note, till next time, folks, it's BD, and you have listened to Isles Beat.
All this trouble is about, but I'm sure it must be your fault.